this hour's top stories. Iran says its decision to increase uranium enrichment to 60% is in response to the recent act of sabotage at the Natanz nuclear facility. The Taliban say they will not attend an upcoming Afghanistan summit in Istanbul until all foreign troops leave the country. The U.S. president vows to keep pushing for significant changes for black Americans and address their concerns about the policing, prisons, and economic disparities. Those were the top stories of Welcome. Iran says its decision to enrich uranium to 60% purity is in response to Sunday's act of sabotage against the country's Natanz nuclear facility. Iran's ambassador to the IAEA says that as the enrichment at this level will be implemented in two cascades of the new IR-4 and IR-6 centrifuges in the Natanz site. Qasem Gharibabadi added that Iran has begun the technical process and enriched uranium with the 60% purity will be produced next week. Tehran has notified the IAEA of its decision, which has been confirmed by the agency.
Iran has officially informed the International Atomic Energy Agency of its plan to start enriching uranium to a 60% purity level as of Wednesday, following Sunday's act of sabotage against the country's Natanz nuclear facility that Tehran blamed on Israel.
Yesterday we sent a letter to the agency that we are going to add 1,000 more centrifuges to Natanz facility. That is in addition to the current number of machines. And also today, we just sent a new letter to the agency saying that we would start from tomorrow enrichment up to 60%.
Araghchi said the terror act against the Natanz site will help boost Iran's enrichment capacities. He also touched upon Iran's demands that it would put forward during the upcoming talks with the remaining signatories to the 2015 deal known as the JCPOA in Vienna.
We insist on what we have asked, that all sanctions should be lifted, we verify, and then we go back to full compliance if we are satisfied with the verification process.
President Hassan Rouhani also said all parties to the 2015 pact must honor the commitments they made while inking the accord. The Vienna talks that will be held this week have been eclipsed by the sabotage incident at Iran's Natanz uranium enrichment facility. In a letter to the UN chief, Iran's foreign minister blamed Israel for the incident, saying the move amounts to a war crime and nuclear terrorism. Mohammad Javad Zarif also denounced what he called Israel's terrorist idiocy, saying the regime has made a very bad gamble by sabotaging the Natanz facility that would strengthen Iran's hand in talks to salvage the JCPOA. He also warned the U.S. that neither sanctions nor acts of sabotage can serve as leverage in JCPOA talks.
Americans should know that neither sanctions nor acts of sabotage will give them leverage in the negotiations, and that such measures will only make things harder for them.
Israeli media have acknowledged that Israel was behind the incident at the Iranian nuclear facility, but the U.S., Israel's closest ally, has denied any involvement. Nonetheless, on the same day that the Natanz site was targeted, U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin was meeting Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, who vowed again to do everything in his power to stop a burst for salvaging the JCPOA. The administration of U.S. President Joe Biden says it wants to revive the Iran nuclear deal, but for now, the sabotage act at the Natanz facility has further deepened Tehran's distrust towards Washington.
The United States says it remains committed to nuclear negotiations with Iran in the light of Tehran announcing its decision to enrich uranium to 60% purity. President Joe Biden's press secretary, Jen Psaki, said the administration believes the diplomatic approach is the only path forward and that having a discussion, even indirect one, is the best way to come to a resolution. Meanwhile, France said it is readying a response to Iran's announcement. The French presidency added that the Iranian move is a serious development which needed to be coordinated at least with the remaining parties to the 2015 nuclear deal. Author and journalist Robert Fentina says Iran's decision to further scale back its JCPOA commitments has legal merit.
Yes, this is Iran is being completely reasonable. It is the Iranian government is doing what it needs to do for its people. to protect them, provide them with nuclear energy that's required. The other signatories have violated the agreement, first the United States, and then the European signatories following along with the U.S. It's very clear, and the Iranian government, Iranian spokespeople have said from the start, that if the United States removes all sanctions and re-enters the JCPOA in full compliance, then Iran will comply also. The U.S. is demanding that Iran go first and comply fully. But the Iranian government has no reason to believe what the U.S. says and to accept the U.S.'s commitments. So the Iranian government, in increasing the enrichment rate and in demanding that U.S. remove sanctions first, is completely reasonable and completely within the law.
Iran has summoned the ambassador of Portugal, the current holder of the European Union's rotating presidency, to protest the latest batch of anti-Tehran sanctions. Iran's foreign ministry slammed the sanctions as politically motivated and noted that Tehran is considering counter-sanctions against the bloc. Iran has already said it will suspend comprehensive negotiations with the EU, which includes talks on human rights and all cooperation based on the talks. This includes cooperation regarding refugees and fighting terrorism and drug trafficking. On Monday, the EU added 8 Iranian officials and 3 entities to its sanctions blacklist over alleged violation of human rights. Iran has repeatedly rejected the accusation and criticized Europe for its double standard on the issue of human rights. Iraqi media reports say a facility affiliated with Israel's Mossad spy agency has been attacked in the north of the country. A security source said a number of Israeli forces were killed in the attack. The incident comes hours after an Israeli ship was attacked in the UAE port of Fujairah, that should be, causing damage but no casualties. The vessel sailing under the Bahamas flag belongs to the Israeli Ray Shipping Company and was loaded with cars. Israeli media say the attack was likely carried out with either a missile or a drone. The Israeli Daily Jerusalem Post says the incident comes 2 days after a sabotage attack on Iran's Natanz nuclear facility. It says Iran had vowed to avenge the act of sabotage at its nuclear site. Israel's Channel 12 has also quoted unnamed regime officials as blaming Iran for the ship attack. U.S. President Joe Biden will reportedly withdraw all American troops from Afghanistan by the 11th of September of this year. The withdrawal is said to be based on certain security and human rights guarantees. The U.S. Secretary of State and the Defense Secretary are expected to brief NATO allies on the decision on Wednesday. The U.S. decision, should it be confirmed, would miss a May 1st deadline for withdrawal agreed with the Taliban militant group last year. The Taliban, on the other hand, say they will not attend a summit on Afghanistan's future due to be held in Turkey later on this month until all foreign forces leave their country. Since the U.S. invasion of Afghanistan in 2001, thousands of people, including women and children, have lost their lives in that country. U.S. President Biden has pledged to push for significant change for African Americans.
And not only, but we also have an awful lot of things we have to deal with, not when it only comes to police, when it comes to advancing equality, economic opportunity. Cedric always says the thing that he would drive him crazy.
Biden said every agency of his administration is focused on triggering a change for African Americans. The U.S. president added that black lawmakers helped bring about that change by contributing to the passing of his $1.9 trillion coronavirus stimulus package, which he said will reduce poverty among the black community. Biden also called for a thorough investigation into the shooting of Donta Wright by a police officer in Brooklyn Center, Minnesota, which resulted in the black man's death. Several instances of police brutality against African Americans have sent that as shockwaves across the nation, sparking nationwide anti-racism protests. 6 years into the refugee and migrant crisis, the numbers of people fleeing to Europe are dropping due to the coronavirus pandemic. Still, a record 600 asylum seekers crossed the English Channel to the UK just last summer from the French port of Calais amid warnings from human rights groups about a right-wing backlash. But as my friend Said Pourreza now reports, thanks to activists, some of those asylum seekers and refugees may have just gotten their first taste of home.
Lining up for donated clothes and a warm meal, more than 100 men who have survived Western-backed wars in the Middle East and Africa and a death-defying journey to get to the UK. A former bank employee, Keenan, is a Syrian asylum seeker living in temporary accommodation in the Welsh city of Cardiff.
I didn't leave my country in the first 5 years of the war. I left after 8 years and a half. I tried and did my level best to stay in my home country and not being a refugee. Refugee is not a good thing to be. It's not an option.
Before Cardiff, this father of one and his fellow asylum seekers had been housed in a dilapidated army barracks in the coastal village of Penally. Economics graduate Fateh worked as a risk analyst in his home country.
When I first came here, I had no idea about military camps, but we put into camps and it was a horrible experience.
The UK government says it takes the well-being of asylum seekers extremely seriously, and any abuse is completely unacceptable. But the organizer of the welcoming event in Cardiff, who has also spent a lifetime combating racism, believes the government has failed to live up to its obligation.
Without a shadow of a doubt, they failed. They failed miserably. Some of the initial accommodation is abysmal. We have seen people rehoused in shared houses where they have to share one bathroom, one kitchen with dangerous kitchen facilities.
After surviving the dangerous journey to Europe, they were greeted with this: far-right protests in Dover last year.
Here in Cardiff today, an act of kindness and compassion towards asylum seekers who come here from far and wide, from the Middle East and Africa, among them doctors and engineers. Contrast this with the kind of hostility and hate they have been receiving from some people who think that their country is under invasion by irregular immigrants.
One of the consequences of coronavirus has meant the country's already overloaded asylum application system has ground to a halt, leaving these men living a life of wait and see.
Many people have been living here in limbo, not knowing when their asylum process is going to be progressed. And of course you have some people here who are separated from their family. They have family.
Britain remains the fifth most favorite European destination for refugees and asylum seekers, way behind Germany, France, Spain, and Greece. Keenan and other refugees and asylum seekers have survived war and the perilous voyage here, but their journey to call it their new home is yet to end. Said Pourreza, London.
Pakistan has been the scene of violent protests after the government apparently backed out of its commitment to expel the French ambassador. The repeated publications of blasphemous cartoons of the Prophet Muhammad in France has been the main cause of anger in Pakistan. Javed Rana is in Islamabad.
It was a pitched battle in garrison city of Rawalpindi near Pakistan's capital Islamabad. These were repeated scenes across Pakistan. The violent clashes erupted after what protesters blamed the government to have backed out of its agreement with them to expel the French ambassador to Pakistan over the repeated incidents of public display and republication of blasphemous cartoons of the Prophet Muhammad. Many died and dozens of others injured from the both sides in the clashes after the protesters blocked the major railways and road links. Protesters claimed that at least 10 of their companions were killed and over 100 were arrested by the police.
This government doesn't care about the dignity of our Prophet. Obviously, people take to the streets to show their anger. We gave the government 5 months to expel the French ambassador, but they did not expel him. We will continue our protests until our demand is met, which is the expulsion of French ambassador.
Pakistan has a history of similar violent protests over the frequent incidents of blasphemy of the Prophet under the guise of freedom of expression in the West. Protecting the honor of the Prophet is the most sensitive issue in Pakistan, which attracted millions of people on the roads in the past.
sending the French ambassador back may be a kind of a step which again could provide an immediate relief as far as the domestic political scene is concerned, but that is not going to solve the problem. Today it is France, tomorrow it will be another country, and so we need to be having a comprehensive campaign.
Pakistan has been under pressure from Paris-based anti-money laundering outfit, the Financial Action Task Force, which placed Pakistan on a grey list a few years ago on the charges of terror financing. Now Pakistan needs French support together with other countries to come out of the grey list, because of which Islamabad is reluctant to expel French ambassador. However, rising anti-French sentiments in Pakistan are leaving little option with the government but to expel French ambassador. Javed Rana, Islamabad.
Muslims around the world are making or marking the holy month of Ramadan. It's the second time they observe the fasting month amid the coronavirus pandemic. Yusuf Jalali reports from Tehran.
The Ramadan crescent moon has been sighted in Iran, and this means the fasting month begins on Wednesday. During the holy month, Muslims abstain from eating and drinking from dawn to dusk as a means to practice self-restraint. In Iran, restaurants close during the day and instead work longer hours overnight. This is especially the case for confectionaries, where they add these special sweets to their shelves every year in Ramadan.
Iranians usually break their fast by eating sweet and energetic foods. So every year in Ramadan, we bake Zulbiyan baklava because they refresh the body after hours of fasting. You can find them in every Iranian confectionery during Ramadan.
This is the second year in a row that Muslims observe the fasting month amid the coronavirus pandemic. With Iran now under a partial nationwide lockdown, religious authorities have ordered that all mass religious ceremonies be either canceled or held in open-air environments with social distancing.
I pray to God to help us overcome the coronavirus. Unfortunately, this year, as in the previous Ramadan, the pandemic has kept us from gathering together to practice the Ramadan rituals.
Ramadan has always been a chance to take part in charity works, and now that the pandemic has unemployed many people, Muslims feel bound to rush for help.
During Ramadan, charity institutes ramp up their activities. This year, many people have lost their income as a result of the pandemic, so more families depend on donations to be able to break their fast.
Ramadan is the ninth month of the lunar calendar, where months begin and end depending on the movement of the moon in its orbit around the Earth. At the start of each month, depends on the sighting of the new moon the day before. Some Muslim nations, such as Iraq and Lebanon, started the fasting month a day ahead of Iran.
To Muslims, Ramadan is more than just a time to abstain from eating and drinking. They find it an opportunity to purify the soul from materialistic desires and polish it with spirituality. This year, they use the occasion as a chance to ask God to make it the last Ramadan that is marked with the coronavirus. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Well, that's about it for me.
A diverse range of programs. Youth. Spirituality. Culture. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Our website is www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
U.S. political and military leaders are allergic to admitting failure, no matter how overwhelming the evidence of that failure may be. An entire generation of politicians and officers has been involved in selling the war with misleading and false claims of progress, says Daniel Larrison, writer, in an article published under the heading, Get Out of Afghanistan. Stay tuned, please, for the details of this article. The 20th anniversary of the start of the U.S. war in Afghanistan is only 6 months away, and it is still uncertain whether the Biden administration will withdraw the last remaining American troops from America's longest war. Last month, President Biden seemed to pour cold water on the possibility of leaving by the agreed-upon May 1st deadline, but also added that we are not staying a long time. Given how long the war has dragged on and how intense the resistance to withdrawal is in Washington, it is hard to believe that U.S. forces will finally exit Afghanistan this year. The administration's apparent unwillingness to remove the remaining troops on time is a bad sign that they will find some pretext to keep thousands of Americans in harm's way in a war that the U.S. lost long ago. If Biden fails to pull out by the May 1st deadline, he will take ownership of the war and U.S. forces will come under attack again. There is no good excuse for putting U.S. troops at risk for another 6 months, and nothing will change between now and November that makes withdrawal then any safer or more orderly than it would be if the withdrawal happened in a few weeks. Allowing a delay in the withdrawal will encourage hawks to agitate for more delay and to urge Biden to send more troops to support the troops that are coming under fire. The president says that it will be tough to exit Afghanistan by May 1st, but he bears the blame for that because of his own foot dragging. Had the Biden administration acted swiftly to honor the Doha Agreement, the withdrawal could have already been underway by now. But thanks to redundant consultations and reviews, the time needed to complete the withdrawal has been all but frittered away. Previous presidents have refused to make the necessary decision to withdraw because they have not wanted to be accused of losing Afghanistan. But Biden needs to recognize and publicly acknowledge that the war could not be won once the U.S. set such unrealistic goals for itself. The U.S. was never going to have the political will to outlast the Taliban because sooner or later the U.S. was going to leave and they aren't going anywhere. The public has no appetite for escalation and a large majority of Americans want U.S. troops out. Support for withdrawal is strongest among veterans and their families who have borne the burden of this war and have the largest stake in it. Ignoring majority opinion to continue an unwinnable war is a perfect example of the lack of democratic accountability in the U.S. foreign policy. Biden has an opportunity to put himself on the right side of public opinion and to do what is in the best interest of the country. But he must be willing to ignore the carping from foreign policy establishment figures and hawkish pundits. U.S. political and military leaders are allergic to admitting failure, no matter how overwhelming the evidence of that failure may be. An entire generation of politicians and officers has been involved in selling the war with misleading and false claims of progress. The perverse incentives of U.S. political culture have made perpetuating failed policies much easier and more rewarding than ending them. This is how withdrawing from a lost war has become more politically risky than prolonging the conflict. The persistence of the non-essential safe haven myth has meant that many Americans imagine that the war in Afghanistan still has something to do with preventing terrorism on U.S. soil 2 decades after the original attacks, but it does not. Keeping troops deployed in war zones is not a safeguard against terrorism. If anything, maintaining a military presence in countries where American forces are not wanted is more likely to provoke more attacks in the future. Regardless, the reality is that the U.S. is exceptionally secure from physical threats, and terrorism is a relatively minor threat that does not require them to wage decades-long wars. Withdrawing from Afghanistan should force U.S. political leaders and analysts to recognize that the larger so-called war on terror has also been a costly waste. U.S. heavily militarized response to terrorism has served only to cause more death and destruction across two continents. It is time to end the U.S. war in Afghanistan, and then U.S. government needs to shut down the rest of the endless wars that it has been fighting since 2001.
Food for thought.
Hello, dear friends, and since we're on the threshold of the blessed month of Ramadan, here is food for thought from Imam Ali ibn Musa Reza, peace be upon him, the 8th infallible heir of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, on the benefits of connecting the month of obligatory fasting by observing fast on the closing days of the month of Sha'ban. God Almighty writes a reward of 2 successive months of fasting for those who fast on the last 3 days of the month of Sha'ban, continuing with their fasting through Ramadan.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
تمام ارزش‌ها و صفاتی که انسان احترام می‌گذاره، همه این ارزش‌ها در علی ابن ابی طالب جمعه.
Human in general, whether a Muslim, non-Muslim, or even a disbeliever, respect the values present in the character of Ali ibn Abi Talib.
لا يقيم أمر الله سبحانه إلا من لا يصانع ولا يضارع ولا يتبع المطامع.
Imam Ali عليه السلام, the reason we love him as our hero, or not only in the material sense, in the spiritual sense, in the leadership sense.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. The program's to my brother, and I'm your host, Mehdi. We're talking about the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam. Please stay with us. Imam Ali alayhi salam, the most distinguished and extraordinary personality in Islam after the Holy Prophet Muhammad. His entire life is a struggle for the advancement of Islam, the universal religion prescribed by Allah for all of humanity. Imam Ali alayhi salam was the living miracle raised up by the Holy Prophet Muhammad himself, and was not only the successor and the executor of the Holy Prophet Muhammad, but as history testifies, he was also a great human being, a brave defender of Islam, a just and fair judge, a generous philanthropist, a champion of the people, and the most pious person of his time.
تبقى عيني بدمع مشتاقيا قد لسعت حية الهوى كبدي فلا تبيب لها ولا راغي.
What non-Muslims say about Ali, the first successor of Prophet Muhammad.
Sir William Moore, 1819 to 1905, Scottish scholar and statesman, held the posts of Foreign Secretary to the Indian government as well as Lieutenant Governor of the Northwestern Provinces, says the following about Imam Ali in his book, The Life of Muhammad. Endowed with a clear intellect, warm in affection and confiding in friendship, he was from the boyhood devoted heart and soul to the Prophet. Simple, quiet, and unambitious when in after days he obtained the rule of half of the Muslim world. It was rather thrust upon him than sought. The Life of Muhammad.
Welcome back, dear friends. It's great to have you with us. This is IRIB English Radio, the program's to my brother, and we were discussing the universal persona of Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib alayhi salam. So, dear friends, one of the amazing lessons which we learn from the truly universal persona of Imam Ali, peace and blessings upon him, is generosity and honesty. And so when we look at the historical texts, whether they are found in the Shia school of thought or the Sunni school of thought, and even when we look at the historical texts or the commentaries and biographies written by non-Muslims, we find that beyond a doubt, Imam Ali was the most generous and the most honest man after the Holy Prophet Muhammad, peace and blessings upon him and his holy household. Now, how can we say that Imam Ali was the most generous and the most honest man? Well, as regards to being the most generous, the highest degree of generosity is to offer one's life. And Imam Ali, peace and blessings upon him, as has been written in the historical texts, we find that by lying and sleeping in the bed of the Holy Prophet on Laylat al-Mabit, the night where the Holy Prophet migrated towards Medina, Imam Ali sacrificed his life for the sake of the Messenger of Allah in order to save the Holy Prophet Muhammad. The historian Ibn Athir reports that the Quranic verse in chapter number 2, verse 207, which says, "And among men is he who sells himself to seek the pleasure of Allah," was revealed about Imam Ali when the Holy Prophet left Mecca for Medina. And it was at this time that the Holy Prophet asked Imam Ali if he would lie and sleep in his bed in order to be able to escape. And so here we find that when he gave up his life, when he sacrificed his life, Imam Ali was the most generous man. And when it comes to the most honest man, we find that the Holy Prophet asked Imam Ali on the next day to transfer the people's trust which had been entrusted to the Holy Prophet Muhammad. And so, truly, a profound lesson talking about generosity and honesty, which we should both inculcate into our lives, brought to us by the universal persona of Imam Ali, alayhi salam.
IRIB English Radio. You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
And now we invite you to listen to Sayyid Ali Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, about the personality of Imam Ali alayhi salam.
تمام ارزش‌ها و صفاتی که انسان چه به عنوان انسان مؤمن به اسلام چه به عنوان انسان مؤمن به هر دینی
human in general whether a muslim non-muslim or even a disbeliever respect the values present in the character of Ali ibn Abi Talib. This means Ali ibn Abi Talib is a global character who is respected by Sunnis, Shias, and even non-Muslims. Everyone, even the faithless people, respect Imam Ali and his personal values.
Sayyid Muhammad Rizvi talks about the personality of Imam Ali alayhi salam.
Today, I would like to focus on examples from non-Muslims who admire the sermons of Amir al-Mu'mineen, especially when it comes to Nahj al-Balagha. And we are talking about the non-Muslims of the present day. A third example, as far as, you know, non-Muslim entity is concerned, those who appreciated the wisdom of Amir al-Mu'mineen even after 14 centuries is the United Nations Organization. In the year 2002, UN actually issued a report regarding the Middle East. The title was Liberating Human Capabilities, and the subtitle of that report is Governance, Human Development, and the Arab World. So they have a survey of, you know, how the Arab societies work, and then they have solutions there, recommendations of what they should do. And just so that the Arabs don't feel bad about it, that, you know, UN is saying we should follow the example of the West, they actually say you don't need to go here and there for the example. They said you go back to your own history and look at the example of your Caliph Ali ibn Abi Talib alayhi salatu wasalam. It's irony that the Arab world is being told to follow the example of Ali by United Nations. And in that actual report, in one area, they have a box where they have actual excerpts from the letter that Amir al-Mu'mineen wrote to Malik Ashtar about, you know, the principles of governance. Of course, they haven't put everything there, but main important points there. And so this is important to realize that even now, when people look at the history of Islam, you know, the example of Amir al-Mu'mineen, his words, his ideas, and his example basically is still a guidance and light for the people in the modern times. And this is what I would say, you know, this is a challenge for us, the Shias. Shouldn't we be ahead of all others in studying Nahj al-Balagha? Think about it.
Listeners, we hope you enjoyed this episode of To My Brother. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com. We leave you in Allah's care. Bye for now.
The Lies.
Welcome. Welcome to the Light. A section of highway winding through mountains and over the waters in central China provides people with picturesque views as it connects multiple tourist attractions in the region. Guzhuao Highway is located in Yichuan City in Hubei Province. The highway has a total length of more than 10 kilometers. Almost 4.5 kilometers of the highway stretches over valleys and streams. The highway also offers convenience for self-driving tourists. In order to avoid deforestation and protect the ecological environment, building bridges was adopted to replace a traditional approach of digging tunnels and constructing roads in mountains.
Now, a group of researchers have discovered a new mammal from the dinosaur era during their excavations in Chile. The creature, called the Orotherium zen, meaning beast of five teeth, inhabited southern Chile's Miocenes region during the Mesozoic era of the dinosaurs. This is a very important discovery as it fills a gap in information on the evolution of a mysterious group of mammals that became extinct and have no descendants today.
The interesting thing with this finding, and this is based on a fairly well-preserved portion of the jaw with five teeth, is that this animal probably was an omnivore. So it fed on plants, probably insects and other types of food, a varied diet. It coexisted in the same place with other forms of life, including mainly dinosaurs. On rocks with a data that indicates that it was between 72 million, 74 million years old. And this is located in the far south of Chile, in the Magallanes region, in the town of Valle del Rio de las Chinas.
The find may help scientists answer many questions they had for a long time about dinosaurs, mammals, and other groups. This discovery is more significant than other findings because a well-preserved jaw belonging to the dinosaur was found during the excavations.
To Egypt, where archaeologists have discovered an ancient city dating back to more than 3,400 years ago. The city, which is the largest ever found in Egypt, dates back to the Golden Age of the pharaohs. It's located in the city of Luxor, some 500 kilometers south of the capital, Cairo. The city had almost complete walls, as well as rooms filled with tools of daily life, along with rings, scarabs, colored pottery vessels, and mud bricks. Archaeologists say this is just the beginning of the discovery.
We believe that this golden lost city is the most important discovery after the discovery of the tomb of Tutankhamun. I call it golden because it was found in the golden age of Egypt, 1391 BC. I call it lost city because it was lost. No one really believed that the city could exist here. The dazzling Aton, three main districts. One area for storage, we found a big area for the storage of meat, making sandals, also sewing clothing, precious stones for making necklaces and bracelets, pottery. Tell us about the relation of Egypt with the New Kingdom. We think that this is the beginning of the discovery.
Habas says only one portion of the city has been discovered. The team will excavate the area of the temples in September. One other amazing thing about the discovery is that archaeologists found a large fish covered in gold that may have been venerated by the people living in the city. Archaeologists claim this is the second most important discovery since the tomb of Pharaoh Tutankhamun nearly a century ago. As a famous saying goes, everyone deserves a second chance. That's true about humans and animals. Mary is a baby alpaca from Germany. Her hind limbs were severely damaged in a traumatic birth, forcing vets to amputate one back leg. However, that was not the end of the way for this cute woolly mammal. A charitable farmer found Mary and adopted her. Now she has her own special wheeled harness that she works with. Mary's owner hopes to give her
an artificial limb once she regains enough strength to carry weight on her remaining hind leg. That way, she can live as a regular happy alpaca.
The Light is a short bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
The more technology advances, the more robots are seen in more areas of daily life. Now, Chinese engineers have created robotic pets. A Chinese engineering workshop has made a robotic hound called Alpha Dog. It can navigate its way using sensors and artificial intelligence. Alpha Dog can also adapt to its environment using super fast 5G internet. The robotic dog is incredibly stable and has more balance than a real canine. The developers hope their invention can be used to help disabled people, especially the visually impaired.
We are exploring ways of helping the disabled, especially the visual disabled, to live a better life. When the robot dog has the function of vision, hearing, and dialogue too, it can easily interact with disabled people and lead them to the supermarket or the bus.
The robotic pet costs $2,400. Despite the relatively high price tag, over 1,800 Alpha Dogs have been sold. The hound has found favor with a large group of fans, especially children and technology geeks. The developers hope to equip future models with the ability to bark so their product would look more lifelike.
Cheese goes well with food items indeed, especially on the breakfast table in almost every home. But have you ever tested halloumi? The rubbery cheese I'm talking about from Cyprus, which now gets EU protected status. Halloumi is a traditional homemade item in Cyprus, with historical accounts suggesting its production as early as the 16th century, believe it or not. Now, the salty cheese is the country's second most valuable export. In Turkish, it is known as helim. Europe has now decided to recognize halloumi, called white gold by dairy farmers, as a unique thing to be divided in the eastern Mediterranean island there. Locals usually enjoy it tossed in the frying pan or barbecued, eaten raw with melon in the summer, or cubed and thrown into the boiled with soup.
Now an ancient town in central Italy is fighting for its life as it seeks to become a UNESCO World Heritage Site. Located in about 100 kilometers north of Rome, Civita di Bongelo has earned unsettling title of Dying Town, the Dying Town. The stunning landmark was built 3,000 years ago on a hill for military reasons, but landslides, earthquakes, and erosion have progressively reduced it to around a third of its original size. Now a UNESCO status may help it survive.
Our motto is resilience because Civita was founded by Etruscans, passed through the Roman era and the entire medieval period to reach the present day. This place is so fragile because the problem it faces is its geomorphological conformation. The cliff is made of clay and volcanic rock, and it is always subject to atmospheric agents, rain and winds, that have totally changed its appearance in recent years.
The fragile town is home to 14 people. Surprisingly, it was a big tourist attraction until it began charging an entry fee to visitors in 2013. Over a million people visited the site in 2019 before the coronavirus pandemic. Residents and officials hope the town will survive with the arrival of visitors who bring money for maintenance.
Mm-hmm.
baby capybara has found a new family at a zoo in the Colombian city of Cali after she was abandoned by her mother soon after birth last December. The little capybara is 3 months old and is under the care of a surrogate mother who is in charge of providing her with the skills she needs for optimal development. The baby capybara was rejected shortly after birth by her first-time parents. But the zoo hopes that in a couple of months, she will be able to unite with another female of the same species.
As the COVID-19 pandemic has affected most sectors in one way or another, a Swiss tech firm has created a robot that can disinfect airplanes in a few minutes. The startup called Uvea says the robot emits powerful ultraviolet lights as it slowly moves down the aisle, killing 99% of bacteria and pathogens, including the coronavirus. The company says a robot can disinfect a single aisle in 13 minutes. The startup co-founder says the UVC technology has been used for decades in hospitals and labs. He says the fact that the rays could be harmful to humans prompted them to seek an autonomous robot that can carry out the task.
It's quite an old technology, but it's quite dangerous. That's why we want to take the worker out of the range of the light. So that's why we made a robot, because there is some solution when you are near the light, and that's dangerous. So we really had to make this system autonomous. So we switch it on, we leave, the machine makes the disinfection, all the plane, all around, and then it stops automatically. So the worker are not in contact with the machine.
The company is hopeful that technology could help restore travelers' confidence in safe air travel and help bring the worst-hit aviation sector back to its feet.
English Radio, a window to peace of mind and spirituality. You can tune in to RIB English Radio 24 hours a day. We are with you. Are you with us? Are you with us? Are you with us? This is our voice from the heart of the Islamic Republic of Iran, RIB English Radio.
The limelight.
The U.S. hypocrisy to come will be even greater than anything tried by the Trump administration, says Patrick Lawrence, writer, in an article published under the heading Biden's Inhumanity on Syria. Stay tuned for the details, please. For a time after Joe Biden took office, not quite 3 months ago, among the questions raised was how the new administration would address the Syrian question.